This is a special report from CBS News in Washington, where the President of the United States is about to address the nation on the postal strike. Here is CBS News White House correspondent Dan Rather.
Good afternoon. This is the situation. The President of the United States requested time for a broadcast to the nation this afternoon to address the American people about the postal strike. The requested time was for this hour, 2 p.m. Washington time. Just before we came on the air, our understanding is that the White House requested that the President be allowed to go a bit early, a bit before 2 o'clock Washington time. Then word came that the President wanted to go 10 or 15 minutes past the hour. We know not the details of why that last-minute maneuvering about the time. The situation is, though, that the President at the moment is not in his office at the White House. He was to have gone into a meeting with his defense secretary and leaders of both parties in Congress about an hour ago. We're told that that meeting is now underway. So we expect to have the address by the President in 10, 12, perhaps as long as 15 minutes. In our Washington studios with me are CBS News correspondents Eric Severide and Daniel Shore. CBS News is prepared to switch to New York for on-the-scene reports of the situation there and interviews with postal workers after the President's address is over. And Postal Union Chief James Rademacher is to be here with us in our Washington studios for comment a little later on. Perhaps we should start by bringing you up to date on where the strike stands at the moment. The issue, as you may know, is that strikers are demanding that wages, which range from $6,176 as a beginning wage to $8,442 a year after 21 years service, be increased to a pay range from $8,500 to $11,700 a year. That's what the strikers are asking. The current status, President Nixon has said that he would take emergency action today, if necessary, to move the mails, and that no talks would begin unless a majority of workers returned to their jobs. That's what the President said over the weekend. The President did not specify what type of emergency action he would take, but speculation persists that he may use troops. Underline that I said he may use troops to free the logjam of mail. That's what the speculation has been ever since Saturday when the President said that if the strike was not over today, he would, as he put it, meet his constitutional obligation to keep the mails moving. Cities without service as of this hour, cities where carriers have voted to continue the walkout beyond the President's deadline of today, include New York City, Los Angeles, Cleveland, Philadelphia, Denver, and Minneapolis. Chicago plans to poll its union members later on this afternoon. Cities with restored service include Albuquerque, New Mexico, South Bend, Indiana, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. We're also told in a late report that about 98% of the postal employees are on the job in Boston. As for military mail, air mail for U.S. troops in Vietnam is reported running about 50% below normal because of the strike. Now, as for Congress, and one wants to keep in mind that the Congress has a very important role to play in this, in that no wages can be increased for the postal workers until and if Congress approves, Senate Republican Leader Hugh Scott says that Congress will not act on legislation to boost postal workers' salaries as long as workers remain on strike. That is the situation as of the moment. For those of you who may join just a few seconds late, the President has requested a 10 or 15-minute delay in the starting time for his address from the White House. In the interim, Eric Severide, perhaps you could put this in some kind of historical perspective for us.
Well, I must say, in this situation, it might be easier to look at the past than the future. I don't want to be accused of indulging in instant prophecy here, and the President has not yet spoken. We'd all assumed that if he wanted airtime today on a national basis, that he probably was going to announce that troops would be used. But that's just our supposition. He may not at all. So we're waiting like everyone else. Nothing has come out of these meetings in the White House to give us any indication of what he's going to talk about. Troops have been used before, but I believe they've never been used before to replace federal civilian workers at their job. They've been used on the docks, private enterprise, and railroads. They were once used in World War I, I think, in the lumbering industry in the West Coast. Harry Truman, not only going to use troops during a railroad strike about 20 years ago, he was going to draft the strikers who right into the Army. That never really got to a test, as I recollect, because they got back to work just about right then. But this is a thing of extraordinary proportions, this strike. We've all taken the mail carrier, the kind of a friendly neighbor who very quiet person, which you wouldn't expect to act this way, and maybe this has something to do with it. They've been taken for granted for a very long time, and they've been very patient in this matter of the wages. despite the fact that they've broken their agreements. I would think that this crisis, which Mr. Nixon's chronology would be his seventh big crisis, his first in office, would have a lot to do not only with whether the economy keeps going or goes into a real sharp depression because of this, or whether we have a whole new postal system, which is long, long overdue. I think, wasn't it Larry O'Brien, the Postmaster General, just a few years ago, said about 3 years ago that the post office is in a race with catastrophe, financially, in terms of mechanization of the service.
Well, that's part of what the strike is about, isn't it? Dan Shore has been following the story in the Capitol and in Congress. That's basically one of the roots of the strike, isn't it, Dan? The insistence on the Nixon administration to tie any wage increase to postal reform.
Yes, Dan, there's an enormous irony in this strike, in that one of the reasons for the strike is the sheer unwieldiness of trying to deal with 750,000 employees when the employer is Congress. And one of the reasons why you couldn't get a pay increase in time to avert the strike was the very attempt to get out from under that system and get into a new system of setting up a public corporation which would run the post office and abolish the U.S. Post Office Department. It has a long and tangled history, but let's just take it briefly back to 1968, when a commission, a very high-level commission, headed by Frederick Keppel, the former president of American Telephone and Telegraph, brought in a report proposing that a U.S. postal corporation be set up as the only way to avert the imminent collapse of the post office. President Johnson at that time didn't do very much about it, although his postmaster general, Larry O'Brien, was a firm advocate of the idea. In fact, only finally, sort of, in his final State of the Union message, did President Johnson propose it. Well, President Nixon picked up the ball and ran with it and used a tactic, and I don't want to lay blame because there's a generous amount of blame to be laid everywhere, but the tactic that was used in Congress was to try to hold up the latest pay increase and hold it as a hostage to get action on a bill establishing a public post office corporation, a bill towards which most people in Congress were hostile and towards which most of the postal unions had been very hostile. They rather liked dealing with Congress. I recall one postal union leader saying a few years ago that they find Congress very responsive to their demands. And there's another irony. This Congress, which was so responsive then, has turned out now to be not responsive enough. Well, it got muddled in Congress. Last October, there was a bill passed by the House providing for a 5.4% pay increase. The Senate had a different bill with a 4.4% increase. Those never went into conference. They're lying there. The administration didn't talk of a veto at the time, but said the president didn't like that bill. And the result was that finally the House committee came out with a 5.4% pay increase with postal corporation, and then the strike broke.
We're still waiting for President Nixon and those at the White House to give us the go-ahead that the president is indeed ready to address the nation on the postal strike. While we continue to wait, let's switch to our CBS News studios in New York and CBS News correspondent Joseph Mette. Joe, what is the situation as of this hour in New York?
Well, Dan, we have the situation in New York from a remote unit at the main post office, but more than that, we can give you some other facts and figures which might tell you the scope and depth of this walkout. More than 180,000 postal workers are now out by post office department figures. Another 51,000 who had been on strike returned to work today, and the post office department says that a great majority of its workers did not walk out and are on the job. The department said a total of 59 cities, including Boston and Buffalo, which were closed by the strike Saturday, reopened this morning, and several major cities report half workforces already in. The post office department said that no employees are on strike in several postal regions, which include Atlanta, Georgia, Dallas, Texas, Memphis, Tennessee, St. Louis, Seattle, Washington, Washington, D.C., and Wichita, Kansas. Here in New York, of course, is where the walkout began last Wednesday. Some 53,000 postal employees are on strike in the New York area. Only a trickle of those workers, less than 4%, showed up for the morning shift at the main post office. This is the scene from our remote camera here in Midtown Manhattan. CBS News correspondent Robert Shackney is there. He is getting the strikers' reactions to the awaited presidential address. Bob?
Most of the post office workers are outside the general post office, not working inside. The crowd's built up since word came that the president was going to speak. Among those here is the president of one of the striking unions, the Manhattan Bronx Postal Union, Mo Biller. What do you expect to hear from the president? Do you have any hopes that it'll be good news?
Well, I hope it's good news. Unfortunately, the rumors around here seem to be talking about troops, and I'd rather wait and listen.
If troops come in, what happens then?
If troops come in, my opinion would be a tragic day in American history. You cannot sort mail with bayonets. This must be remembered. The Manhattan Post Office alone employs 43,000 workers. Do they intend to have 43,000 troops? Seems to be utterly impossible.
My sense of this group here is that New York postal workers are pretty solidly behind the strike. Ronnie Kearns is one of the mail carriers. Is that true? Very solid?
That's correct. There is unanimity amongst all postal workers in New York City and New York throughout the state, basically.
Do you think there's any chance that the Army could get the mail through in New York?
Very, very slight. In fact, I have the gravest doubts in my mind. They could not get it through. This is a skilled job and can only be handled by skilled people, and these people are technicians. They're skilled. The people out here on the line, outside the building, the Army cannot do it.
Not very many people here think that they'll be troubled if the Army comes. This is not the kind of a postal union or postal group of postal unions that seem ready for any kind of violence. But the conviction of most postal workers seems to be that there is very little chance that the Army can do the job. Now, once again, back to Dan Rather in Washington.
Thank you, Bob Shackney, on the streets in New York. Just walking into our studio, Mr. James Rademacher, who is the chief of the National Postal Union, with him CBS News reporter Bob Schieffer.
Dan, Mr. Rademacher and I have just been at the Labor Department, and he has been meeting with some officials there. I'll ask you, Mr. Rademacher, did you get any briefing on what the president's going to say?
No, the organizations representing the many unions in the Postal Service were just advised that the president is going to make a message or deliver a message. And it was the hope of those who told us this fact that there would be some agreement with what the president had to say. Until we know what he has to say, I don't know whether there'll be any agreement or disagreement. All I can say, though, representing the National Association of Letter Carriers, from what I just heard on the streets of New York, I certainly support the motives that caused this reaction. I cannot support, by compulsion of law and other reasons, the continuation of the Wildcat strike. Throughout this nation, you have almost complete support of 200 million Americans. You've got support of the administration, which immediately set the negotiation into action. You have the support of the Congress, which is ready to react. Now we need the support of the people that are withholding their services to go back to work. And for those that may be wondering about it, here are telegrams received within the last 2 hours. 10-1 favoring returning to work, voting to return to work, while the others are still holding out to see what their brothers in New York do.
And those are from postal unions. Mr. Rademacher, we'll get back to you, sir, after the president's address. Dan?
We will indeed, Mr. Rademacher. One additional question, if we may, Bob. Mr. Rademacher, you've been quoted as saying that if the strike continues for another 5 days... If no settlement is reached within 5 days, I should amend that, if no settlement is reached within 5 days, you would ask the AFL-CIO to call a general national strike. Is that correct?
I want to make it very clear. I have a mandate of 500 delegates at a conference here that I call because of the emergency to allow 5 days of negotiation, and if we're not satisfied that progress is being made and agreement can be reached, I must then, by mandate, call a national strike. That 5 days shall commence, in my opinion, when the people are back to work and we start negotiating. If in 5 days, in my opinion, we have not reached the kind of agreement necessary, I will then ask George Meany to ask all labor in the United States to support our cause.
Thank you, Mr. Rademacher. And as you can see, ladies and gentlemen, that is roughly the outline of why the president has said that he wants to address the American people about this situation this afternoon. Again, for those of you who may have joined us a little late, it was true that the president had asked for time beginning 15 minutes ago to address the nation on this subject, but that came just about the time the president was in a meeting with his congressional leadership and with Defense Secretary Melvin Laird. Since then, we've been told the president will be a little late. This is film taken at that meeting just about an hour ago at the White House. Among those present with the President, Speaker of the House John McCormick, Democrat of Massachusetts, House Majority Leader Carl Albert, Democrat of Oklahoma, House Minority Whip Leslie Ahrens, substituting for Gerald Ford, who was out of town. Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield was there, as was Senate Minority Leader Hugh Scott and the Secretary of Defense, Melvin Laird. We're told that the President is in his White House office and is now prepared to speak.
My fellow Americans, I want to report to you on developments on the postal work stoppage and on the actions I have decided to take. First, the overwhelming majority of postal workers across the nation remain on their jobs, upholding their tradition and their oath to support the Constitution of the United States. Second, in many communities where walkouts occurred last week, postal employees are returning to their jobs. However, in several large cities, the post offices are shut down. In New York, for example, the mail system is wholly paralyzed by illegal walkout, and essential services have been halted. Last Saturday, I pledged to the nation that if the current situation existed on Monday, today, that I would take action to fulfill my constitutional obligation to move the mails. And I am taking that action now. Injunctions have been sought, and in most cases already granted, forbidding striking postal workers from interfering with those who wish to return to work. I have directed the Attorney General to take whatever action he believes necessary to see that these court orders are obeyed, and working with local authorities to see that no illegal picket lines interfere with workers returning to work. Secondly, I have just now directed the activation of the men of the various military organizations to begin in New York City the restoration of essential mail services. New York City is where the current illegal stoppages began. It is where the mail has been halted the longest, and it is where the resultant problems have become most acute. If the Postmaster General deems it necessary to act in other affected major cities, I will not hesitate to act. These replacements are being sent in as a supplemental workforce to maintain essential services. Only as many workers as are necessary to accomplish that will be used, and they will be withdrawn as the striking postal workers return to their jobs. Let me now address my comments to both the postal workers who have stayed on the job and those who are engaging in the work stoppage. The United States postal system is a vital element of our entire communications system. The poor depend heavily upon it for medical services and also for government assistance. Veterans depend upon it for their compensation checks. The elderly depend upon it for their Social Security checks. The nation's businesses depend upon it as a way to stay in business so they can meet their payrolls. And our men in Vietnam depend on mail call as their only link with their loved ones at home. From the time I came to Congress 23 years ago, I have recognized that the hundreds of thousands of fine Americans in the mail service, the post office department, are underpaid, and they have other legitimate grievances. For the past year, almost since the day we took office, both the Postmaster General and I have been working to alleviate not only the legitimate grievances of postal workers, but to move to eliminate the source of those grievances. That is, the obsolete postal system itself. A system that no longer serves its employees, its customers, or the country as it should. That was why that among our first major legislative proposals was wholesale reform of the United States Post Office. Included have been requests for increased pay for postal workers, for increased benefits, for compression by 60% of the time it takes a worker to move from the bottom to the top of the pay scale. I believe that if that postal reform had become law, we wouldn't have the current crisis. But that crisis is here, and it has brought additional grievances to the fore. The country has recognized these inequities in postal pay and benefits. This administration has always been willing to work them out. As the Secretary of Labor and postal union leaders indicated again Saturday, we stand ready to begin negotiations, discussions on all issues, including pay, immediately after postal workers are back on their jobs. But we cannot and we will not negotiate while thousands of postal workers are participating in an illegal work stoppage. At this time, it is only those who have struck and are staying off the job who are preventing meaningful negotiations and resolution of their problems through those negotiations and the legislative process. And so I urge you to return to your jobs so that these negotiations can begin in an urgent but reasonable climate. Just as this issue goes beyond the question of mail service, so my remarks at this time are addressed to all Americans. What has occurred here is that some employees of the federal government are now not only going against the best interest and the best tradition of their service, but against the recommendations of their national union leaders, against the oath of office that they took, against orders handed down by the federal courts. And they are cutting off service essential to thousands, millions of Americans. What is at issue then is the survival of a government based upon law. Essential services must be maintained. And as president, I shall meet my constitutional responsibility to see that those services are maintained. And I'm asking for the understanding and support of every American in this decision that I have made in behalf of our country.
You have just heard the President of the United States speaking live and direct from his office in the West Wing of the White House about the National Postal Strike. Before we move into the analysis and comment section of our broadcast, we should make it clear, I think, that we had no advanced text of the President's remarks, that we were hearing them for the first time, as you did. First to CBS News National Correspondent Eric Severide.
Well, this is the first use of troops, whether federal, army, or national guard, to replace federal civilian workers, as far as the history of these things goes in this country. It is limited to New York, and on a supplemental basis, the president here seems to me to be using a minimum of power, of force, and a maximum appeal to reason and to the emotions of the people involved, the pity for the old and the sick, veterans and others who will not be getting their mail and their checks. And has ended firmly saying he cannot, as the leader of the government, negotiate under duress. It has been very low-keyed, firm but not dramatic, nothing at all as defiant as we've seen in the past, for example, with Mr. Truman and the railroad workers long ago.
Eric, and I believe now that CBS News correspondent Robert Shackney is ready in New York City for some reaction from postal workers there. Bob?
There are a lot of postal workers here, and they all have heard the president's speech. He said, your national leaders say you should go back to work.
Well, I don't think the national leaders that are saying going back to work are speaking for the people that are out here in the street. We are out here because we are sick and tired of promises that have been broken for 18 months. Our butcher and our baker can't wait to negotiate with us. We need the money now.
He says he's sending the National Guard in to move the mail in New York. You work in New York, you think he can?
That is highly illogical. It's impossible for it to be done. I don't see how he could make a statement like that. Because as far as I go, he has never worked in the post office. He doesn't actually know about the post office system, only by what other people in that house tell him himself. It's highly illogical.
Is there any chance that he's changed anybody's mind?
No.
I doubt whether the president has changed anybody's mind. Bob, in January of 1969, the president of the United States stated that a street cleaner in New York City makes over $10,000 a year, and he sees no reason why a letter carrier shouldn't. He has given us nothing but broken promises rather than a decent living wage. And you know, it's ironic that instead of offering us legislation or something, making an offer, the Congress of the United States, who in 3 days can vote themselves a 41% raise, has offered us absolutely nothing. Let him make us an offer and let us take it from there. We will go by the mandates of our people.
The president says he won't negotiate unless you go back to work. Will you go back to work?
No, we won't go back to work because we're sick and tired of being second-class citizens. Most of us are reserve, and we did serve our country. And is this the way the president treats his veterans?
Some reactions from New York postal workers. Now back to Dan Rather in Washington.
CBS News correspondent Robert Shackney in New York. Now, after the president has spoken, we call on CBS newsman Bob Schieffer, who is with the chief of the National Postal Union, Mr. James Rademacher.
Well, Mr. Rademacher, you have heard the president and you have heard some of your own people in New York. What's your reaction now?
Well, I'm inclined to agree with both. Any citizen of this country that had to live under the conditions that our members did, who have just spoken, will understand their attitudes. I have another attitude. I agree with the president of the United States in one area. There's a national crisis. Letter carriers, most of whom are veterans, know what that means. It's a national crisis. It affects the people of the United States of America. I'm absolutely opposed to anyone replacing professional letter carriers. I'm going to urge at this time and later, personally, if I can, and in writing, to the president, that he at least withhold any action until midnight tonight. At the same time, I am now asking, I don't want to demand, I'm asking, pleading. I want all picket signs down. I want all picketing to cease in the United States in front of the postal establishment, which represents the United States government. I want no further demonstrations in front of any postal establishment that represents the United States government. There is a crisis. Your leader is now going to ask the president to withhold that final crucial decision until midnight, and all of the remarks about second-class citizens are true, all the remarks about inadequate pay are true, but nothing can be done to correct them by people that are ready to correct them until we get back to work. We're ready to negotiate. It'll be the finest package ever, and I urge you to cooperate now with the office of the President of the United States.
Mr. James Rademacher, who is the chief of the Postal Union. Thank you very much, Bob Schieffer, and Mr. James Rademacher, who is chief of the National Postal Union. Former Vice President Hubert Humphrey today called President Nixon's handling of the postal strike, and here I quote, drift and delay, and former Vice President Humphrey urged Congress to pass the postal pay raise bill immediately. In Washington, with my colleagues Eric Severide, Daniel Shore, and Bob Schieffer, this is Dan Rather. Good afternoon.
This has been a special report from CBS News in Washington. This is CBS.